jazzandjazz.org. Under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel D.I.s. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
Like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Days, 140 hours. That is how long I have been waiting to do this episode of The Collision, brought to you on WPFW, your home for jazz and justice, trying to change the world one broadcast at a time. This is where sports and politics collide. I'm Dave Zirin, joined by 10-year NBA vet, author, poet, statesman, Etan Thomas, and researcher, activist, man about town, Chuck Modiano. 120 hours I've been waiting to do this show. That's 5 days. I hope my math is right because of what occurred on Sunday. Etan Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How are you doing?
Obviously, I am bursting to do this episode of The Collision. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Great and easy.
Man, you hear I'm in the mode right now.
You're in the mode, 120 hours. Your math is tight. We're ready to go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I was a little worried about the math. Of course, Etan and Chuck, I'm speaking about the all-pro wide receiver of the Miami Dolphins, Tyreek Hill, nicknamed Cheetah, fastest person in the game, but not so fast as to outrun an instance of police brutality. Tyreek Hill, for those who don't know, and I'm sure folks do, but you never know. You had the debates this week, a lot of news in the press, that Tyreek Hill, right outside his Miami Dolphins stadium for the first Sunday game of the NFL season, gets pulled over by police for speeding, taken out of his car, put to the pavement twice, struck. He says he just had knee surgery. They do not care. His teammate, Calais Campbell, comes over. Locker room leader, 38 years old, Walter Payton, man of the year, comes over to de-escalate the situation. They put him in handcuffs. They put Tyreek Hill in handcuffs. They are both charged with crimes. And it's all caught on video tape and was all a part of the Sunday pregame shows before the games even took place. Atan wrote about it in an amazing article for The Guardian. Chuck Modiano knows a great deal about white athletes and traffic stops. So we have a great, great deal to talk about, not least of all because for Atan, Chuck, and myself, this all had a one holy heck of an echo to a lot of the work the three of us have been doing for the last decade before Colin Kaepernick took a knee in 2016 about that nexus between pro athletes, pro black athletes, and police brutality. So Atan Thomas, I start with you, sir. Your reaction when you saw and heard about Tyreek Hill and how that reaction synthesized itself into the article you wrote on the topic.
Well, first of all, don't leave out your article. You wrote a great article in The Nation.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can't leave out yourself now. there's a lot to discuss with this, and I don't even know where to start. I mean, my first thought of this, of course, is dealing with young people. And I have, been talking about this and writing about this for a while, and my article was basically a message to young black teenagers of saying, you have to understand that you can't do what you see white people do. And, it's a strong reaction from that. And I was like, okay, just read the article. It explains everything. And I told the story of when I went to college in Syracuse University, young 17, 18 year old, and I was looking around, seeing different parties, seeing different things, seeing how we do our parties, seeing how it's like higher learning. You know what I mean? Like we have our parties, the police break it up, say, hey, it's time for y'all to go home. Then you go down the street and you see the white fraternities and sororities carrying on, doing everything, police not, engaging with them. And this was really the first week. So I recanted this in my article. I remember seeing a white girl, literally cussing the police out. And my mouth dropped. My teammates were next to me. We were looking and staring like in shock. And the police didn't do anything. You know what I mean? It was like 2 days later, up by anybody listening that knows where Syracuse knows where Kimmel is, right up close to Kimmel, right after one of our Shine parties. And I'm seeing a white girl that was kind of parked illegally and the police were telling her to move, and she told him all kinds of things. And again, the police didn't do anything. I remember going, this was all in the first week. There's like a sorority row, fraternity row, and seeing the white kids, frat boys, out with their red cups and kicking it and partying, having a great time. I remember seeing the police saying, hey, go back into your houses. And they responded like, we don't want to go back in our house. It's a free country. You don't have to go anywhere. And I'm literally, this is all the first week. So I wrote back to my mom. I was like, Mom, you'll never guess how these white people talk to the police and nothing happens. Mm. And she told me very clearly, as long as you know that you can't do what you see them do, because they will react very differently with you. Now, relating this to Tyreek Hill learned that he cannot do what he sees other people do. We see videos of white people who are talking to the police all kind of ways. We have different occurrences, whether it's a mass shooting where they take the white person alive who has just killed multiple people. That's not going to happen if a black person does this. There are two different, worlds. And that's what I wanted to write about, because the message is for now. You point that out. But now you're talking to young black teenagers to be able to understand they're not going to treat you like they treated Tyreek Hill. It's going to be worse. The police isn't going to be reprimanded immediately. They're not going to come and want to apologize. That's because it was Tyreek Hill, an NFL star. It was all over the news, everywhere, it went viral. That's not going to happen with you. So you have to conduct yourself a certain way, because you're giving trigger happy cops who are overzealous and want to exert their power on you a reason. So it becomes a whole different conversation. So that's the angle that I wrote about. And it's hard, sometimes a lot of white people don't like to have that conversation, but this is a conversation that necessarily wasn't for y'all. This is for talking to young Black teenagers who are in this position right now, and they have to be, it's a matter of them getting home safely and not getting home safely. So that's what I wrote about.
And of course, the question that Tyreek Hill said in the press conference afterwards, the rhetorical question he asked the world, he said, "What if I wasn't Tyreek Hill?" And unspoken in the answer to that is something horrific could have taken place. Mm-hmm. Like absolutely horrific. Something that destroys families, destroys communities, and destroys individuals could have taken place. Before I go to Chuck, Etan, you know what first came to my mind was an interview we did, you and I together, before Colin Kaepernick, I believe, before 2016. I'm going to see if you can recall this. You and I interviewed former Duke University point guard Nolan Smith, who I know I'm going back in the Wayback Machine, but he told us a story of being pulled over by police and having a gun quite literally put in his face in Durham.
Right.
In Durham, a short drive from Duke, where he led a team to a national championship, and how the police officer had a gun trained on him, but then put the gun down when he said, "Oh, you're Nolan Smith."
Mm-hmm.
And you know that's what I first thought about, because this idea of, because that, what if I'm not Tyreek Hill? Oh, you're Nolan Smith. What's unspoken in that comment from the police is, oh, you're not just a Black person. You're not this anonymous person. You're not a stereotype who I need to pull a gun on. You happen to be somebody I know, and therefore your humanity is restored.
Well, even with that, though, I think they knew that it was Tyreek Hill within, as soon as they ran his plates, as soon as they ran everything. I think his name popped up. But then you have to think of, if they would do that to Tyreek Hill, you know, on a busy street in Miami, right outside the stadium, what are they going to do to other Black people, maybe on a road where nobody is watching? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think the response afterwards, the immediate, you know, suspension or administrative leave or whatever you want to call it, that would not have happened if it wasn't Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, no way. I don't think
they would have. They wouldn't have done that. They didn't even have an investigation yet. They just automatically, because it went viral, not from their dash cam, from all the people who were passing by saying, "Wait a minute, is that Tyreek Hill on the ground with the police?" And they took out their phones. So Sunday night, the videos were going all over the place. That's why the police said, "Okay, we're gonna, you know, try to get in front of this and, you know, everything else." But if it wasn't for that, you would never have heard of this.
Yeah, heck, the police officer in question now wants to meet with Tyreek Hill. The chief of police of Miami-Dade County wants to meet with Tyreek Hill, and you know it's so ridiculous because of course we can't separate this conversation with how Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida has just unleashed that police department on people, particularly young Black men, young men of color in that state. It's a horrific story. I think we can get more into that deeper into the show, but we're gonna stick just talking about Tyreek. But I think the larger Florida context is so important, because there's no way police chiefs throughout that state are trying to meet with young Black men who are harassed by police officers. That's just not happening in Ron DeSantis's Florida, except when it's a very famous person caught on video and it becomes the story in the United States on the opening Sunday of the NFL season. It speaks also to the power of the NFL. You know, like as said in the movie Concussion, the NFL is so powerful, it took Sunday from God. You know, that's how powerful it is. Right. And that's supposed to be the Lord's Day. And it's the NFL's day, and it was the first Sunday of the season. So those factors led to a response by the police department, which you would never get in any state, but let alone Ron DeSantis's Florida. So I'm going to throw it to you, Chuck, because before we get to some of the research you've done, Chuck, I got to ask you just, because you've been around this issue for so long, your response, your gut response, how you process seeing the video, how you process the news.
Well, I'm gonna get to that.
DZ, but let me just cite your articles, some classic lines, because Etan wrote about Tyreek Hill learned he isn't allowed to do what white people do. So, quote, if Becky had told the officers that she had knee surgery, would they have questioned her story and manhandled her that way? I think we need to sit with the Becky question right there. Mm-hmm. I think we know what the answer to that is. And then DZ, you're talking about the owners, and we have to talk about the owners in your article, Police Violence, Tyreek Hill, and the NFL owners. And, you know, when you said you might expect the NFL to stand up for one of its most famous players, but the NFL does not cross police. The NFL partners with police. This is the league that blackballed Colin Kaepernick. And I thought right away of Colin Kaepernick. And the reason I thought about Colin Kaepernick is because when he came out, I remember my Twitter timeline being flooded with, oh, he's a millionaire. Oh, he should be grateful. I think your friend Doug Gottlieb from CBS, DZ, I know he's not your friend, but your friend Doug Gottlieb was like, talking about how he's rich, he's a millionaire, he should be thankful for the millions he gets. And right away, my first reaction was, hey, listen, I don't think those millions are insulating black people from being treated like black people. Now, it might be insulated from Tyreek Hill staying alive today and not going to jail and not getting beat more if they knew he's Tyreek Hill and at what point they knew he was Tyreek Hill. But that was the first thing that went through my mind, this notion that black athletes should be just so grateful because racist white people are willing to give them a few million so that they can make a few billion. That doesn't make sense to me.
That's strong, Chuck. And Chuck, to it back to you, though, you've also done a degree of study about white athletes and traffic stops. And I'm hoping you could share some of what you learned by looking at that, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, you know, back in the 2000s, you were at The Nation, right? And any of us who were sort of writing in this ilk, I think I was writing for Cosella, Starting Five, writing free for blogs. There were like five of us. Shout out to the Starting Five, D. Will and them. And we were covering meticulously over years what we couldn't see anywhere on ESPN. And it was every day on ESPN. At the top of their ledger, there would be a black athlete who misbehaved. And it could be a traffic ticket. I mean, Pac-Man Jones is legendary. Every day, they would have a cornerback. Cornerbacks aren't, you know, big names. He's not he's a marginal player. And Pac-Man Jones would be there every day. And you'd go in the ESPN comments section, and it would just be a virtual lynch mob. It absolutely would be. ESPN was making millions off these white people congregating and really talking about all black people through Pac-Man and any other athlete or Barry Bonds, everyone you've written about. And he would be a receptacle for hatred. So I said, okay, you know what? How come I keep seeing these traffic stops for black athletes all the time? Joakim Noah, whoever it is. And I never saw anything for white athletes. I'm like, let me like go find. And I'm going to tell you why you don't see white athletes and traffic stops. So I'm going to give you one quote. And this is from Jose Canseco's book, Juiced. And it's a very underrated book. It's a seminal book in the steroid canon because everything he said became true, even though the media panned it at the beginning. Everyone he said was on steroids became true. But I believe it is a great book as a media book because when I read his book was really, he was just as incentivized to talk about his different treatment as a Cuban than Mark McGwire as anything else. So here's the passage. He's like, that's how the system works. Some players are protected by the system and abuses, and they hang them out to dry as scapegoats. It's disgusting how baseball works. Walter Weiss, the shortstop of the A's, and Mark McGwire once told me a story about the day Mark and Walt were racing their cars after a game at the Coliseum. And this old lady was she was driven off the road. She was forced off the road. What happened? Where was the media frenzy after that? Nowhere. After all, this was Mark McGwire, the golden boy, so everybody covered it up. The organization covered it up. The police covered it up. The media, everyone. And what he just said, if you go over and try to look up white athletes, like you could find Michael Phelps in a car crash
And it's a one-day story. I wrote a lot about it. One-day story. I don't know if money exchanged hands, what happened. There are a lot of Michael Phelps stories out there, by the way, that people don't even know about. I'm close to Baltimore. And he was just, you know, painted as a recovering addict in a very nice light. I could go on for days and days. I'm going to stop there. The reason you don't hear about white athletes is because they are protected by all of those organizations. And I believe if Tyreek Hill were a white athlete, they might be getting his autograph at the end. Okay, that's how that would have ended. So we got to be real, have a real conversation, and talk about how media exploits black athletes for their profit, and they don't do so for white athletes.
You know, Etan, I have so much I want to talk to you about, but before I throw questions at you, do you want to say any response to that before I change the subject slightly for a different angle on this?
Well, no, it's so interesting. And another thing I thought of was, you know, my former teammate, Tabo Cephalosha, and he was, you know, if people that don't know the story of what happened with him, the NYPD ended up breaking his leg, and he wasn't even involved in any incident. He's outside of a nightclub, and he was with his teammate, and I can't remember the teammate's name. If you can remember.
Errol Antich.
There we go. And there was, I'll let you describe, what is the difference between the appearance of his teammate and Tabo Cephalosha?
Pero Antich looked like a bad guy from one of the John Wick movies.
Okay.
And if people think I'm exaggerating, you can Google it if you want. We're talking, you know, 6'10", hulking guy, shaved head, goatee. I mean, he would be very at home wearing a full black suit standing outside a Russian nightclub. And that's how Pero Antich looked.
Right. And Tabo Cephalosha is the exact opposite. He's his personality. He's Swiss. He's his demeanor, completely opposite. And there was a, you know, he was with his teammate outside of a nightclub. You know, there's something happened far away from them. The police zeroed in on Tabo. And they ended up breaking his leg, took him to the ground, swung him around, all these different things. And they didn't. They went right past his teammate. And it was interesting. It was like, well, why did you pick target Tabo and not the teammate? Like, what was the difference? And the story that the police, if you remember this, the story that they came out with before the video came out, you would have thought that Tabo was like the Incredible Hulk and took on the whole police squad. And then the video came out and nothing like that happened. And they want to apologize, meet with Tabo, all these different things, you know, because they try to, you know, save face with the PR thing. And that's the difference that keeps happening with athletes. And you can go down the list. James Blake, the U.S., you know, tennis player who they tackled, you know, and thought he was, they said they thought he was somebody else. There's plenty of examples, right? The thing that I like about Tyreek Hill is he's understanding that this is bigger than him. He did not do everything correctly. I said that in the article. I've said that every time. The way that he responded was the opposite of what I tell young people that how they have to respond when they are stopped by the police. Okay. However, the police reaction is so extreme, so different than what we see when white people do the same thing. So what he's saying is he's not going to let this go while he's in the media and saying, no, this isn't right. No, I don't want to meet with them. No, I don't want to have a beer summit or something like that. Mm-hmm. And cool my moment in front of everybody to say that we're really, you know, that's not, he said the police officers should be held accountable. Now, he might not have articulated the best way, but that's what he's basically saying. And I'm glad he's saying this because people have to really understand this, that if this was not Tyreek Hill, and if this was a regular black man, a teenager, somebody 13 years old, that the entire outcome would have been completely different. Even with what we saw then due to Tyreek Hill, it would have been a lot worse.
Wow. So, Etan, a couple things. One thing I want to ask you, and I want to throw this to Chuck, too. One of the things that's gotten not a lot of publicity, I mean, I put it in my article, but this is hardly something that's being blared out in the, you know, the big NFL press, is that the franchise owner of the Miami Dolphins is a man named Stephen Ross. Very good friends with Donald Trump, has given him millions of dollars to his campaign over the last 8 years. And Stephen Ross is also somebody who used to be the head of an organization called RISE, which was all about, as they put it, you know, fighting racism in our communities. And I keep thinking about how people don't remember the second person who took a knee after Colin Kaepernick. And that was Kenny Stills of the Miami Dolphins, wide receiver. And Kenny Stills got in all kinds of hot water in 2019 when he said Stephen Ross is a hypocrite. He said that about his boss. He said he's a hypocrite because how can you say you want to fight racism and support Donald Trump? This is hypocrisy. Mm. And woo, I mean, that was a big deal when he said that at the time. And it also raised a lot of attention on the ways in which a lot of these franchise owners like to have their cake and eat it too. And in 2024, this year, an election year, it takes on an extra significance because Trump is even more front and center than he was in the last two elections. Good Lord, we've been dealing with this man a long time, saying explicitly that he will deny federal funds to police departments that don't do stop and frisk. Mm-hmm. Deny federal funds that don't do stop and frisk, basically saying this will be the law of the land. And the second thing that he is saying is total immunity for police officers in situations like what happened to Tyreek Hill. So, Etan, is it a bridge too far to call out Stephen Ross in a situation like this to say something about how he could support a man who could, if elected, could make sure that what happened to Tyreek Hill is not something that causes any sort of duress or suspension, but actually would be something that's the law of the land?
I definitely don't think it's a step too far. I mean, I think that's what should happen. I mean, you have to throw Governor DeSantis in there as well with all of his supporters. I mean, because you said it a little bit earlier, there would be no issue of apology and an invitation to a beer summit, you know what I mean, in the state of Florida ever. That's not what happens. I mean, that's just not the history of Florida or even the present. So you understand that it's for a reason. But yes, I think that, you know, and it takes someone as brave as Kenny Stills. And we have to give him a lot of props, you mm-hmm. know, with his ability to call out his boss on the hypocrisy. That takes a lot. Like when people always talk about, why don't athletes stand up? Why don't athletes say this? And it's okay, well, you know, what are you doing at your job, at, you know, in your work and standing up for whatever it is? That's what Kenny Stills did, mm-hmm. literally, like specifically of his boss. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a step too far, you know, but just give a lot of props to Kenny Stills.
Yeah, and I know a little inside info that Kenny Stills, you know, is attempting to and has been able to reach out to Tyreek Hill to be like, yo, you need to watch this documentary, 13th by Ava DuVernay. There's some things you should read, because now that you're in the middle of this, it's so important to get that political. It's one thing just to say this was wrong, it can never happen again. It's another thing to have that kind of political understanding that you have, Etan, that you, of course, you have, Chuck, as well, like that you have actual background about why this is taking place. That's so important, because the spotlight will be on Tyreek Hill as he goes through this process over the next however many weeks.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's looking out for one another, too, you know?
It is, and it's important that it's Tyreek Hill, because they can't play that game that Tyreek Hill doesn't belong in the league like they did with Kaepernick, which is absolute nonsense. They can't blackball him the way they blackballed mm-hmm. Eric Reed. And then I still got some people saying Eric Reed wasn't good enough, even though he like set the Panthers record in tackles that year. Shout out to Eric Reed and Kenny Stills. And there are a number of players who are also blackballed, but they were marginal enough that you could make a plausible, crazy case that they should have been off the team. So you can't do that with Tyreek Hill. He's likely the best wide receiver in football. So the fact that others are reaching out to him and speaking with him, I think that's highly important.
Highly important indeed. Yo, let's go to a quick break right now. When we come back on the other side, I'd love to talk to you both about the concept of the perfect victim, quote unquote, and what is asked of people for sympathy from, let's be straight, white America, mainstream America when caught up in a situation of police violence. This is The Collision. He's Etan Thomas. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin. We'll be back right after this here on WPFW, your home for jazz and justice.
What is the definition of freedom, justice, and equality for the black man? And where and when is it to be attained?
Are we talking equality? They say the roof on fire, well, let it burn like calories. I used to fill out applications hoping they hire me, knowing the color of my skin could be why they fire me. You still found a way, had to stack what you can. I remember first whip, had to grab me some rims. Leaving work, cops had me pulled over. Why you acting so tense? Is it all cause I'm black, it's my tent? Okay, tell me if I'm wrong or not. Why reaching for my license and my registration can determine if I make it home or not. I got a family and they need me home a lot. Had to write this with my hoodie and Skittles in Arizona. Got me right back in my zone again. Hold up, now I'm going in. Born again, could see it from the gate, how they on the fence. It ain't about how I'm gonna win, I'm gonna win. The way they quick to shoot, you would think we in a tournament. This ain't black and white with me, it's deeper than that. It's more about good and evil, now I'm speak about that. Man, I should've went to law school, probably. I go through trials like a court date, they judge me off my beliefs. Still, I could see what I'm gonna reach. They say the kid glowed up like young boy sneaks. One more peep, we in these face masks that can't smile hardly. They run their mouth, I'm running miles like a mile Aubrey. Young black, successful and God with them. You either stand for something or you fall victim. They act scary in sight, they think we all niggas. Look, the stereotype, it ain't my car system. It's like they photoshop the world with raw filters just to crop us out. Is that the large picture? When you by yourself, you see who are with ya. Cause I'm brown trying to bring me down like dark liquor. Thoughts switch up, will they listen to my black screen? Tell them that we sick and tired, they say here's the vaccine. Gotta pinch myself, is this a bad dream? If we talking super woke, I just had caffeine. Spend a day in my life, come on and sightsee.
Wow, we are back here on The Collision, WPFW. This is where sports and politics collide. WPFW is, of course, your home for jazz and justice, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. Etan, was that you or Mike who came up with that track?
That was me. That was an artist named Nivelle Heiss, very talented young cat. Nivelle Heiss, you can look him up. He's got a lot of great material. You know what I mean? Production's great. You know, he has a lot of passion. That's what it is. Nivelle Heiss.
Can you spell his last name real quick for us?
H-I-C-E.
Okay. H-I-C-E. Heiss.
Yep. Nivelle Heiss.
That's great. Great stuff. I wasn't sure if you said Heiss or Heist.
No. Okay. Yeah. Heiss.
Which would be a pretty cool name actually. But it's on, and Chuck, next subject here, which I think is really important and a facet of this story, is this concept of the perfect victim. Because I have seen a lot of people, and when I say a lot of people, I mean a preponderance. Like, it feels like a majority of people. And, you know, I'd like to say I assume it's all white people. I can't say that for sure because it's social media and the like, but people who are saying there should be no sympathy for Tyreek Hill, even saying that he deserves something like this because of his personal life, because of issues in the home, because of issues with partner and child, as if that has anything to do with what happened to him by police, as if police knew any of that stuff when they pulled him over. And to me, it reminds me of stuff you hear on, from everything from Israel and Gaza to all sorts of other issues about this idea where mainstream America, if they are going to have sympathy for anybody who is subject to state violence, they need that perfect victim, in a sense. They need, if you're, I mean, you even hear this about what some clowns, and I don't want to say their names, say about people like Emmett Till. You know, making up things about Emmett Till for the purposes of saying, well, then maybe what happened to him is understandable. And it's such a disgusting line of thought. But I wanted to give you a chance to say something about that, that this search for the perfect victim in order for, as a permission almost, for people to care.
I could go, Chuck, or you want to? I mean, I have a lot to say about it, but I don't want to.
You both got a lot to say. Go, Etan.
Well, I think one of the things that happens is they want to demonize the victim because they don't want people to look at them as a victim. So then they as soon as you see a black person who is, you know, assaulted by the police or killed by the police, the first thing that the media does is they go to look into their past to be able to pull up something to justify or make the mainstream America not feel as bad for what they saw or heard or read that has happened to this person. And it's like it follows a playbook. It happens every single time. I mean, everybody remembers, you know, Trayvon Martin, but they pulled up stuff back in middle school that he got suspended for this, or he didn't do his homework on this day. And I'm like, goodness gracious, what does that have to do with what's going on? And but you see that happen all the time. So even with Tyreek Hill, the first thing that I saw, you know, searching, and Twitter can be a very evil place. You know what I mean? It definitely can be, and oftentimes is. But the first thing that you saw from people, you know, a lot of people that don't, you know, I'm not going to say white, but I did see that from a lot of white people who white. And they were saying, well, what about this part in his past? Or with this part that he did? We shouldn't feel sorry from the same thing that you said, Dave. And they relate something that doesn't have anything to do with what they're like if that wasn't there, would the police have responded differently? Like, I don't, the point is trying to make mainstream America not feel sorry for what they're seeing on the video of Tyreek, and that he somehow, you know, deserved it. And that's a very evil thing to do, because it's, you know, it wrong is wrong. And you pointed that out in your article, Dave, where you said, okay, we can have a separate conversation about, you know, this and this from his past that you definitely don't agree with, and, you know, that can, you know, deserve some type of condemnation. But now we'll put that aside on this topic right here, as far as what happened and how the police yanked him out put him on the ground, you know, twice, you know, had a face on the pavement in the hot Miami. And that's one thing people don't understand. Miami, it's still like 90, 95 degrees out there. Your face on the hot pavement, and then tell you not to move. And if you do move or lift your face up, that means that you're resisting. Like, people have to look at the whole context of everything. When they say he didn't follow commands once he was down or he moved, his face is on a hot pavement. You're going to move. Your face is going to come up if it's sizzling on a pavement. But yeah, that's a playbook that is constantly kind of followed when everything happens.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I'm sorry, Chuck. Was that you, Chuck?
Yeah. And it's not a new playbook at all.
Right.
It's not a new playbook. You can go back to the civil rights movement. I had an honor a few years ago to meet Claudette Colvin. And Claudette Colvin, she preceded Rosa Parks in saying, no, I'm going to sit. You can't kick me off this bus. But Claudette Colvin did not check the appropriate boxes to be the vehicle to lead the civil rights movement. So we know Rosa Parks. And Claudette Colvin's still alive. We honor Rosa Parks, as we should. And we have a living person, and to this day, we don't give her love because she wasn't the perfect victim. She was pregnant at the time. And we do that, and not we do that, but like generally white people do that all the time. And you know what? When you do that in policing, let's see, what are you really saying? You are saying, if you don't meet my prerequisites and comport yourself the right way, the police can do anything they want with you with impunity, and they could murder you and get away with it. And you don't think the police get that message? You don't think the police know that? I was just at a rally for Justin Robinson 2 days ago in the street, and everybody in Anacostia is coming out for this young man because he's just the latest in a list of young black men in D.C. to be killed while sleeping in their car and not treated appropriately and woken up to medical care, but a police gun in their face and they kill him like they did Antoine Gilmore, Delano Martin. I met his mother a few days ago at the same rally. So this is happening right here in DC right now, and we can't really get good media for that right now. I don't know, even though he was a violence interrupter with the DC Cure the Streets program, he's still not getting the love that he should. Maybe he's not respectable enough. I don't know. It's happening right now, and Tyreek Hill is still alive, but Justin Robinson is dead.
Justin Robinson, that's a name people should know. People should Google that name, know what's happening right now, because talk about not getting the news publicity that it needs. That's one right there. And Atan, let's remember later in the show, I want to talk to you about Elijah Gantt. We're staying on that story finding out what happens in Ferguson, what his court case is looking like. People who listen to the show know the Elijah Gantz story. One could probably guess it involves police, it involves a confrontation, and it involves Elijah Gantz, a young man, I believe 19 years old, facing decades behind bars. So we got to go back to that as well as we discuss it. Etan, one other thing about this is, you know, there's this search for the quote-unquote perfect victim. And the thing that they can't answer, the people who say that, is the Calais Campbell question. Because Calais, like I said, 38 years old, a former Walter Payton Man of the Year for the NFL, you know, someone held up as kind of a paragon of community involvement and virtue. And when Tyreek Hill was asked later, like, well, why did they handcuff Calais Campbell? Tyreek Hill answered, it was pretty sharp. He said, well, because he's 6'8". And this idea of, okay, I see you through your physicality, that you are a threat to me. Therefore, I'm going to put handcuffs on you. I mean, other than, of course, the terrible ending for Michael Brown, it reminded me of the Michael Brown story in Ferguson and the descriptions by the officer, Darren Wilson, as to why he felt like he had to kill Michael Brown. Like this idea of Black man as not just super predator, but as almost like a something out of mythology that cannot be controlled. And therefore, how could the police officer do anything else? I mean, it involved that as well in this. So I was wondering if you could comment on that, but also, like, if you think what happened to Tyreek Hill has maybe, I don't know, but maybe the chance to reignite an NFL discussion that we have seen fall by the wayside since 2020.
Well, the notion of his teammates appearing threatening, and if you watch the video, they were anything but that. I mean, I can understand they pulled over and they was upset and fussing and yelling. Jonnu Smith, he was on the phone, like talking to, I don't know if it was their agent or the team or whoever he was, and telling them what was going on. The police then went in aggressive manner towards him, telling him to move. You're not supposed to be here. And then he was like, well, okay, fine. Yes. And he backed away. I mean, you know, he did everything right. He didn't do anything wrong in this. And they still had that aggression towards him. You know, Campbell, he was checking on his teammate. You know what I mean?
And that's right.
Check on the team, and both of them, they didn't look confrontational, they didn't look aggressive, and they were met with that confrontation, that aggression from the police. And it's the notion of they feel threatened, and they feel, you know, it's so frustrating to hear. Everybody knows the case with Sonya Massey, right?
Yes.
She was a Black woman, and they shot her in the head. And what she did, what she said, they came into, she called them to her house. They felt threatened. She said, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. When they, you know, said something to them, and there was a boiling pot of water on the stove, and I guess she moved towards it. And then they just automatically shot her, and they said, okay, we were in fear. It's a notion where you're a police officer. You have all the power, all the training, all the weaponry and everything. And what you claim as being in fear of constantly, all the time, there has to be a weeding out of, should this person be a police officer? And that's the part that's not examined when you examine repeat offenders or repeat cases of police officers with these types of incidents. You look into their background, and they have multiple incidents when usually that's what happens, and then they're rehired. They're still on the force to have more incidents. So what is ever going to change, especially if they're not held accountable? So that's why if you have somebody like a Tyreek Hill making a big deal of this and not letting it just be swept under the rug, because I would like to see him now push for not only just for this one police officer to be fired, but for there to be something in place of accountability when a police officer does use excessive force and he is, and there is a something put in place right now. It's only if you get caught, only if it blows up, only if somebody makes a big deal of it, and that's just not a sustainable system.
That's no, just not. No. A quick follow up, Baton. You know, we have had police officers on the Collision before, mm-hmm. speaking out against police brutality. What is their argument? I mean, do they feel like people like Joe Estead, do they feel like this system can change within? Do they feel like these officers can be weeded out? Or are they talking about like a full scale rethinking about how we do policing in this country?
So I was going to try to get Officer Joe Estead on the show today, and he couldn't make it. I interviewed him for my book, Police Brutality and White Supremacy, The Fight Against American Traditions. And he was a former vice president of NYPD Union. So he has a lot of inside knowledge, a lot of inside history about this. And the work that he does as far as trying to hold police officers accountable, he feels like there needs to be an overhaul. But what I even quoted him in my article, this is a quote from him. He said, there are a lot more good cops than there are bad. But there are, in fact, systemic problems that have existed in law enforcement for many years. And these problems will always exist until law enforcement acknowledges that there is, in fact, a problem. And that's a wow. very profound statement, because they're looking at this as if everything is okay. That's what he's saying. You know, I mean, until you view something as a problem, then there is no solution for it. There's nothing that's going to be done. And that's the first step. And unfortunately, in many police departments, you can't even get past the first step that there is a problem with policing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong here. The whole thing about, like, we have to talk about it, about rotten apples versus rotten barrel, you know, the whole thing. It reminds me of, I believe it was when Sean Bell was killed by the New York Police Department. And everybody said, bad apple, bad apple. Just one police officer. But then at the I believe it was at some sort of police event, Bill de Blasio, the mayor, who had said some things about, like, wow, we need change. You know, this could have happened to my son, because he had a biracial son. Mm-hmm. And then all the police officers, like, turned their back on de Blasio
mm-hmm. yeah.
at that moment.
Yeah.
And so how can we say it's just an apple or two when there's a full-scale defense? I mean, if a teacher did so, my wife's a teacher. If a teacher at her school did something like breathtakingly immoral, the other teachers wouldn't be like, no, they can't be fired. The other teachers would be like, get them out of the school.
That's exactly right. And I'm of the belief, I wasn't always here, but this is, I really started going out and Trayvon and interviewing people. I'm of the belief it's absolutely unreformable for some of the reasons you just mentioned. I mean, let's take the Baltimore uprising. There was a cop, Joe Crystal, and that Joe Crystal, and he spoke out. And once he spoke out, next thing you know, he's on a mission and backup left him. Next thing you know, a rat is on his car. Next thing you know, he had to move to Florida to escape possibly being killed by other Baltimore police. And I've had a lot of conversations with police who have left the system, or they retired and now they're at a rally and they're with the protesters. And they will really kind of, many will say the same thing. How can you reform something? There's a blue wall of silence, okay? So that blue wall of silence is there not to protect the quote alleged good cop, but it's there to protect the rogue cops. Let's recall Derek Chauvin wasn't the only cop with a knee there. There were three other police officers protecting Derek Chauvin all 8.5 minutes, watching it and stopping anyone else from coming in and intervening. This is how sick this white supremacist police system is. And just because there are a few, quote unquote, people who honestly want to change the system from within, their calculation is wrong. And then I would also point the finger on those alleged good cops who might be good after 5 o'clock or after they leave the beat. But when a good cop, quote unquote, is given a bad order, And that good cop shoots that tear gas on innocent civilians, a war crime in another country. That good cop, by taking the bad order, is by definition a bad cop, just following orders. Isn't that what Nazis were doing? Isn't that what the Nuremberg trials were doing? So I've been at protests, including at the debate a couple of days ago, and I saw all the cops take the same order. And when that happens, they're all bad cops.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was it like outside the debate in terms of how the police responded to protesters, Chuck?
Man, I'll tell you, check out the video that I just posted right before this show and you'll see it, because I got some footage. The debate was amazing. I mean, the protest was amazing. People want a free Palestine, no matter who you are, Republican or Democrat. There was a chant that said, the Democrat or Republican, genocide is bipartisan, and they're making that point, and it went on for a while, and then the police shut down the debate. I mean, they shut down the protest, and not only they shut down the protest, they was proactive. They were using their bikes. They were like shoving people. They wanted to shut down the free speech. And then the video that I just posted at my Twitter at ChuckMoD1 is a couple. I had to look at it closely. They're throwing right roundhouse rights and haymakers. So I have a couple police throwing punches at protesters. Why are they throwing punches at protesters? Well, you know what? They were so aggressive, pushing everybody, shoving everybody. I think one person in the back, like threw water, not even the water bottle, water back, the least of a response to the violence they were getting. And then a couple cops just started wailing on people, weren't even the people who had the water. And you'll see that video. No one has seen that video. And I just see violence at all these protests. And I would say 90% of the time, the violence is instigated by the police to justify the mob that is out there of hundreds of cops that none of them need to be out there. And I can't imagine what the tax bill and how much money was spent that could be going to the community.
Wow. And also in Philadelphia is about to build a new arena as well in the Chinatown.
See that reaction when the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl and all these white people were tearing up the city. I didn't see the cops acting like that, but say free Palestine and they're all up in your face.
Well,
I'm a little angry today. I've been in a couple protests and seen some violence, DZ. It's okay. I'm a little angry. I'm a little heated.
Hey, this is safe space, Chuck. Safe space. Well, as I certainly thought before our show started, this hour was going to fly by. Certainly enough, it has. We're already at that point where I'm going to ask for any last words or thoughts. Atan, any last words or thoughts about anything with Tyreek Hill, specifically about where you would like to see this go from here? I mean, Tyreek Hill said he didn't think we tried marches, we tried kneeling, we have to try something else. And I'm like, well, maybe we need more marches and more kneeling to put more pressure, because obviously that was something that provoked conversation and we need more of that. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, I do think that, but at the same time, I think you need a pressure. You know, he has the ability there in Miami to continue pressuring. Don't take no, you know, apology or beer summit, or because they're going to keep offering that, but actual different policy and different forms of accountability. Not just if the person is Tyreek Hill that is on video being manhandled by the police, but for every police occurrence, that there be some kind of policy put in place, and then a separate entity to police the police. Because that's also very important as well. You can't have the police policing themselves. That just does not work, and it's not even, you know, logical to put in place.
Utterly illogical. I mean, people should ask themselves, do you want a restaurant without a health department?
Right.
And most people be like, oh, of course not. No, someone's got to make sure that kitchen is clean. So we don't want police with oversight. I mean, come on now. And then last word for you, Chuck, I was hoping you could say something about the case of Elijah Gantt in Ferguson. We pledged to our listeners that we weren't going to give this story up. Any news on that, sir?
Well, I'll say stay tuned. I've been a little, you know, I'm on a mess chat where it was been going nuts, but I've been just covering all these protests this week. So I'm a little out of the loop, but I promise a full story. There's nothing that's in the news, right? Not much in the news that I've seen, but as far as, on what's going on, just stay tuned and I'll come back with it next week.
Sounds good. We prayers up for Elijah Gantt and his family. Yeah. Nobody should have to deal with what he's dealing with, especially at his age.
Yeah.
Well, Yeah. Well, y'all fellas, this has been really important broadcast. We're going to send it far and wide for people not listening to us live. Thank you both for your honesty, for your politics, for your work. It's an absolute beacon in difficult times.
Hey, before we leave, let me just say rest in peace to the legend James Earl Jones and Frankie Beverly. They just passed away this week. Rest in peace to both of them.
Who was the second person you said, Tom?
Frankie Beverly.
Oh, yeah.
The legend. Both legends. Thank you for that, Etan. Maybe next week a little more we can say about those incredible people, because that is a true loss artistically, socially, and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, thanks to everybody for listening to Collision. Thank you, Magic Mike. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace. I wanna make sure I'm right, girl. Before I let go.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways you can contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW. So donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Bethesda Theater presents the SOS Band on Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyro celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Wordsbeats and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
Are you passionate about eradicating air pollution? Would you like to participate in the Environmental Justice Artivist Fellows Transformative Community Art Project in Ward 5, Washington, D.C.? We're seeking Ward 5 professional and amateur photographer portraits that capture the theme of what clean air in Ward 5 should be. Selected submissions will be featured in the Up in the Air mural design, which will be installed in a prominent Ward 5 location in fall 2024. Submission is free. The deadline is next Saturday, September 14th. Submissions can be made at socialartandculture.info.
Hey, it's that time again. Join WPFW as we move to get fit at the annual 5K run walk for total fitness. Dynamic fitness instructors will be there, free healthy snacks and water, exciting music, boat rides for families, and a double dutch contest and a hand dance contest are all included in the 5K fundraiser. This event takes place at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. Now, for more details and how to register, visit our website, wpfw.org, or call 202-888-5484. That's 202-888-5484. 84. Meet you at the park on Saturday, September 14th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. WPFW, making a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW's This Is Reggae Music and the Reggae Experience presents a fundraising concert featuring Image Band, Curlew Reggae All-Stars Band, Lady Flame, and Carl Malcolm on Saturday, October the 5th, 7 p.m. until midnight at King Solomon Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast Washington, D.C. Tickets available at Event.